On Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments by telephone in the case Colorado v. Baca. Events leading to the lawsuit started in Colorado with the 2016 presidential election. The case examines the rights of so-called faithless electors. These are members of the Electoral College who don't vote for the candidate for whom they pledged to vote. Keith Whittington is a professor of politics at Princeton University, and he joins us now to walk us through the case. Professor Whittington, welcome to Colorado Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to what happened in 2016, let's start with the basics. What are faithless electors, and what role have they played in elections past?
Ever since the beginning of American history, presidential electors have pledged themselves to vote for a particular candidate. Occasionally, presidential electors will break that pledge and vote for somebody else instead of the person that they said beforehand they're going to vote for. And we call those faithless electors. They've been common. They happen over the course of American history. There hasn't been a ton of them. They don't have dramatic consequences normally, but they have been part of our practice.
Well, let's take a look then at what happened in the 2016 election here in Colorado. And I think we need a refresher. That was a couple years ago.
In 2016, a movement arose primarily among some Democratic presidential electors to encourage presidential electors to break their pledges and vote for somebody else instead of the person that they were initially pledged to. And obviously the goal was initially to persuade some of the Republican presidential electors who were pledged to support Donald Trump to break their pledges and vote for somebody else. And so this was very unusual to have a lobbying campaign beforehand trying to persuade presidential electors to break their pledges. That then ran afoul of some state laws that are actually designed to discourage presidential electors from breaking their pledges. And that was true in the state of Colorado, also true in the state of Washington, as well as a handful of other states. But it's Washington and Colorado that have given rise to this litigation.
You mentioned there was a campaign. I take it that that's very unusual to get these people to change their votes.
Extraordinarily unusual. It's not entirely unprecedented, but it is extremely unusual to try to lobby the presidential electors to break their pledges. Generally speaking, we've regarded those pledges as not something that presidential electors ought to break. We've regarded any effort to try to lobby and campaign directly to the presidential electors as inappropriate and consistent with how the democratic system operates. But 2016 was an unusual year in lots of ways. We've had instances of faithless electors before, but part of what's very unusual about 2016 is we had presidential electors announcing ahead of time that they intended to be faithless electors. And that announcement ahead of time about the fact that people were going to be faithless electors was extremely unusual and really sort of put the states in a bit of a bind as to what to do with those people.
Can you talk a little bit about what happened after 2016?
Yeah. So in the case of Colorado, the one presidential elector in particular, Baca, who is the named litigant in this suit, who had pledged to support Hillary Clinton, but also had then announced that he was no longer going to support Hillary Clinton, was going to cast his ballot for somebody else. So Baca wanted to be a faithless elector, but was not able to be a faithless elector because he was removed from his office before he was able to cast a ballot. And so one question before the court is, does the state have the authority to remove a presidential elector because they don't like how they think they're going to vote after that presidential elector has already actually been chosen for that position?
What about the case law on this? Has the Supreme Court ever weighed in on faithless electors before?
The Supreme Court has heard a very small number of cases across its history involving the Electoral College and how the Electoral College is organized. But we've not had quite this issue about whether or not states can replace presidential electors because they don't think they're going to do a good job, or can states punish presidential electors for how they performed the duties of their office? Those questions the court has self-consciously avoided answering in the past. And so this is the first time the court's been squarely confronted with it.
Walk us briefly through the arguments on both sides.
Sure. So the states argue that presidential electors have long understood that they were supposed to be pledged to a particular candidate. Of course, we don't list the names of the presidential electors themselves. We usually list only the presidential candidate. So voters don't even know who the presidential elector candidates are when they're choosing them, all of which the state would emphasize suggests that presidential electors have no real agency in the process, are not supposed to be understood to have any discretion as the institution has developed over time. Moreover, the state would emphasize that the state government has a pretty expansive authority about how exactly presidential electors are chosen. The Constitution doesn't prohibit states from replacing electors or directing how they cast their ballots. And so as a consequence, the states argue that the Constitution has left this in the hands of the states, whether or not they choose to restrict presidential electors in this way. The argument on the other side, however, emphasizes that presidential electors hold an office, and we generally think of office holders as having discretion about how they conduct the office. The constitutional text specifically refers to the manner by which presidential electors are going to be chosen for the office, but doesn't say anything about the possibility of state governments directing how presidential electors are going to conduct their office. And moreover, they would emphasize that the founders originally, as they imagined the Electoral College, certainly envisioned the possibility that presidential electors would exercise choice and discretion as they exercise the office.
Could a decision either way affect presidential elections going forward? And if so, how would that happen?
It could. I mean, the longstanding worry about presidential electors is that they could change the outcome of the election as the voters saw it in November. That since all the voters are doing is choosing a set of presidential electors who then are casting the official ballot for president in December, there's always been this possibility that the presidential electors might go rogue, might become faithless, break their pledges, and vote for somebody other than the person that voters would have anticipated that they'd be voting for when they were meeting. In practice, this has never been a serious problem, in part because there's substantial social and political pressure on presidential electors not to break their pledges. The worry about this case is, though, that it might, if the court were to say that states can't enforce these laws against faithless electors, it might change the culture and encourage and incentivize more lobbying campaigns like we saw in 2016, and might encourage more presidential electors to think that they actually could and maybe should break their pledges and, as a consequence, do something unexpected in a way that might actually change the outcome of an election.
Do you see the fate of the Electoral College itself on the line here?
I think it is a genuine risk. We have not historically relied upon these kinds of state laws to do the heavy lifting in keeping the presidential electors in line. But there is some concern if the court very publicly struck down these laws and emphasized the idea that presidential electors were capable of independently casting ballots and breaking pledges, that it might encourage presidential electors to do that in the future. And of course, that's very worrisome.
Keith Whittington is a professor of politics at Princeton University. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.